Welcome to Wednesday's show for the first time in the 2015 regular season. We're grading some trades on the Fantasy Baseball Today podcast. Adam Azer, Scott White, Heath Cummings. Good morning, fellas. Hey, how about that CJ Wilson, huh?
He's back.
Is he?
Yeah. I don't know. I don't know that I'm ready to go there yet. Would have been nice to see more than two strikeouts and, you know, just one star. But you could make that, you could say that for any pitcher this time of year. It's only been one start, Adam.
Well, look, Scott, today I'm intentionally overreacting to things, and I want to know what you guys think of it. So we'll do that a little bit later.
It's really too bad that Al's not on the podcast then, because Al was just talking about people overreacting to things and his frustration with that. So you two might have been a good pair today.
Well, that's going to be me today. But remember, it's all a show. We're going to have some overreactions. We'll talk about Matt Latos. I don't know if we're overreacting to Matt Latos. See, that's the thing. I'm gonna give a big reaction to Latos. You guys are gonna tell me if it's crazy or not. Jake Lamb, Steve Pierce. Who's the next JD Martinez? Grade the trade. Fantasybaseball at CBSI.com is our email address. Stat of the day number one, and we'll come back to Jake Lamb in a second, but Jake Lamb, the first player since Chris Davis in 2013 to have 7 RBI in his first 2 games of the season.
And he didn't even start the first one.
Yeah.
That's impressive.
But not necessarily a good thing. In fact, a bad thing.
Does he have one hit on the season? Or no, two hits.
Two
hits, yeah, he has 7 two. RBI.
I think
and
he had
a long
bases,
home run yesterday.
He had a bases-clearing double, I believe, in a pinch-hit at bat in his first game. And then, yeah, he drove in 4 yesterday. So
he's
more
clutch
on Lamb. He is clutch.
Yeah.
I feel like it's been too business-like. How are you guys doing today?
Well, I was surprised at the top of the show you talked about grading trades. Who's making trades right now?
I've already gotten 2 trade proposals by the same person in one league. That I've made 1 trade proposal. People are trading.
Yeah. Is it wise to trade, though? Yeah, I mean, I'll admit I made a trade, too, even before the season started. But that was because a guy missed the draft, and his roster was all screwy, so he was trying to fix things, and I felt like I got a good deal out of it. I don't feel like that's a common situation.
I feel like the time when it is wise to trade is if you have somebody that's reacting like Adam is going to pretend like he's reacting today.
Yes. So I'll ask you this real quick. Is there a guy you're targeting maybe that if he has another good start or bad start or big game or bad game, that you would look to either trade for or trade off your team? So buy low or sell high. Is there an early buy low, sell high candidate that you could think of?
Well, a couple immediately come to mind. One you just mentioned that I'm sure we'll get into later is Matt Latos. But it's a like I think the distinction between him and somebody like, I don't know, like Jeff Samardzija, is I was already concerned about Latos, and so I feel like a start like he had yesterday just kind of validates those concerns.
Well, you're kind of doing the opposite. You're selling low.
Yeah, see, that's...
But I don't feel like it's low.
Oh, okay.
And Tanaka, I think, would be... I'd be a little more cautious about trading Tanaka. Like, Latos, I think he's another bad start away from potentially getting dropped in shallower
right
league.
So he's not part of this discussion unless you're considering buying low on Latos.
Yeah.
For example, Scott, if Tanaka has another bad start,
yeah,
I might consider buying low on Tanaka. I might.
Well, maybe. I mean, it just depends what the market's reaction is. If I owned Tanaka, I would probably be putting out offers right now and expecting not to actually make a trade because everybody will be trying to lowball me. But just in case there's somebody out there who's so confident that it was a fluke and that his elbow is going to be okay, I'd be testing the market.
Keith, so, how about you? Anybody that comes to mind for you?
One guy we were just talking about it seems like everybody in the Rockies is hitting the ball except for Charlie Blackmon. And I think if there's somebody that's overreacting to his, I mean, it's a really bad start, but his bad start, then I'd definitely be buying low.
Well, you and Scott like Blackmon. I argued with Scott last year about Blackmon. I just thought finish and then yeah, you can take it away. I thought that after a hot start last year, he was pretty borderline bad.
Yeah, and that's why I don't know that I'd be looking to buy low on him either. I actually I know I argued with you a lot about him last year, but that was with the benefit of some season remaining for him to snap out of it, and that obviously didn't happen. So I'm a little, I'm a little hesitant to buy into a repeat season for him. Though, I mean, I don't know that he's going. I don't know that the floor for him is much lower than like Brett Gardner, and so it's not like. I guess he was drafted ahead of Brett Gardner, but at the same time, it's not like I envision a scenario where he's getting dropped in fantasy a month into the season.
If the less astute fantasy player is just looking at box scores or stats and saw Alex Wood, didn't really look like he had that great of a game. I mean, if he has another bad game or, you know, another five-inning outing or something like that, yeah, that's the kind of guy that maybe you can sneakily make some type of offer for and get cheap. But you're talking about doing that with guys who aren't as experienced in fantasy. But it happens all the time. So, anyway, let's move on. Stat of the day number two. Matt Snyder, one of our baseball writers, had this one. So Matt was searching for outings in which the starting pitcher lasted no more than one inning and allowed at least 7 runs with his first start of the season within the first week of his team season. Basically, the season debut while a part of the opening day rotation. So what Matt was looking at is whether or not Matt Latos had the worst season debut for an opening day rotation starter ever. And he had one of the 7 worst ever. Other guys who gave up 7 runs or more in one inning or less in their first start of the season: Jose Contreras, the most recent in 2007, Jose Guzman in 87, Nolan Ryan in 74, Bill Hands in 74, Bill Walker in 1932, and of course, Harry Hotch in 1915 with a terrible start, one inning, 8 earned runs. And the only one who went on to have a good season was Nolan Ryan in 1974. So we go right into the overreactions. Heath, is this a big overreaction? Matt Latos is droppable.
I think it's a big overreaction. I think the best tweet that I saw last night was about Latos, and I'm going to butcher the guy's name because I butcher everybody's name, but Matthew Poiliet? Poiliet? I don't know. Anyways,
Perry. Matthew Perry.
You know, he did a nice job. If you're a Marlins writer and you want to cheer up Matt Latos, tell him his FIP is a mere 12.2. His ERA was 94.5. And I guess the point to that was there was a little bit of bad luck to it being that disastrous.
How high could a FIP go? If you get a strike, did he get a strikeout?
No.
No?
I'm almost positive he did not.
Well,
did you guys watch it?
I watched a clip of it. I watched the Braves score the like highlight package of the Braves scoring 7 runs in the first inning. So yeah, that was all the time Latos pitched, I guess.
All right, 2 things. One, Scott White, pretty weak on your part. Get a babysitter. Go to the game. You're a Braves fan. 2,
it's blacked out locally. What are you talking about?
No, go to the game.
Go to the game.
Go to the game. Okay. 2. He looked like a minor league pitcher out there. It was sad. I mean, he just had nothing. He's throwing 90-91.
Yeah.
This was an awful appearance.
That's what I was looking for. I was looking to see how hard he was throwing, because last year he lost 3 miles per hour on his average fastball velocity after missing time with a flexor strain. And I saw one pitch hit 92. The rest were, like you were saying, low 90s. So it doesn't seem like he's regained any velocity since then. And it seemed like the foundation was going to give in at some point last year, and it never happened. So I'm still worried that could be in Latos' future, because that's a lot of velocity to lose for a pitcher that was really his main strength.
So Heath, you're not looking to get rid of Latos yet? You want to wait it out?
Well, I'd like to see at least one more start.
Okay. Yeah, I think that's fair. One more.
All right, next overreaction. C.J. Wilson, 60% owned, is back after 8 scoreless, 2 hits, 1 walk, 2 strikeouts at the Mariners. And I did watch this one, a lot of it, and he looked really good, and people are kind of raving about this start. So C.J. Wilson is back. Overreaction?
Back to what? Like, what are you expecting CJ Wilson to be when you say he's back?
I'm glad you asked. In 2013, CJ Wilson had a 3.39 ERA and a 1.34 whip. But he won 17 games. And now, the ERA and the whip's bad. The ERA's fine, whatever. Mm-hmm. Number 14 starting pitcher in points leagues, number 29 in Roto. So let me say, back to being a must-own in points leagues, which is definitely Wilson's better format.
I don't know. Like, even if Wilson got back to that, that to me is like R.A. Dickey territory. Now, it was better at the time, but I feel like the pitching landscape has changed enough just in the few years since that even if he's that guy again, he's going to be usable in points leagues, but in my mind, kind of fringy, mostly valuable because of the innings he's provided. So I'm not really super excited about him based on this start, even if it is a sign maybe that that he's going to be better than last year.
Well, I mean, the Angels' offense in 2013 may not have been great, but I think it was better than it is now. I'm not sure with that ERA he's going to win 17 games this year.
Fair. Do you guys think you'd rather have Kevin Gausman or C.J. Wilson as a bench player?
I'd rather have Gausman, I think, and then the hopes he gets in the rotation soon. And he looked pretty good in relief yesterday. Gave up a home run, to, two-run homer to Kevin Kiermaier, but otherwise was good and actually got the win. So, I don't know. A points format is the only one I'd even consider Wilson in right now.
Right, right. All right, next overreaction, or is it? Steve Pierce is legit. He's got two home runs already.
Well, I mean, what was my bold prediction, Adam? Actually, we both had a Steve Pierce bold prediction. Mine was a little bolder.
Yeah, yours was that he'd be the best Orioles hitter, better than Adam Jones. Mine was that he'd be better than Pujols, and you might have coaxed me into going even bolder, like top five first baseman or something. I don't remember. Oh, I said he'd be better than Freeman. That's what I said at the end of after you just peppered me and made me feel
2 days in. We're both right. So.
Yeah, there you go. What do you guys think, Heath? What do you think about Steve Pierce?
Yes, Steve Pierce could be a value from where he was drafted. I don't think he'd be better than Freddie Freeman, and I don't think that 2 days have really changed my opinion that much on him.
Yeah. No, I mean, obviously with the bold predictions, we weren't. I think I presented it as I don't think this is the most likely scenario, so if you're asking me today who's going to be better, Adam Jones or Pierce for my prediction, or Freddie Freeman or Pierce for your prediction, Adam, I would still take Jones and Freeman. Mm-hmm. But you know, obviously a great finish to last season. Last 100 at-bats, I think he had like an 1,100 OPS or something. You know, then a great spring, five home runs, and here we go. It keeps going. I just feel like it's after a while, you have to kind of take it at face value.
And there's the momentum continues to build. I just feel like the list of guys that semi-breakout at age 31 and then complete the breakout at age 32 is pretty slim.
So would you rather have Prince Fielder, like let's say you own Prince Fielder and someone offers you Steve Pierce right now, what do you click?
I would probably counter with Fielder for Pierce and a second player.
Oh, and then I'll say no. You have to do this trade or I quit the league. And I keep your money.
What?
Wow. I think you better say yes.
No, if you're saying my only option is Fielder for Pierce straight up, I'm probably going to reject it out of stubbornness, but it would be hard to do that.
Heath?
Yeah, I'm not going. I'm not real big on Prince Fielder, but I'm not going to do that deal.
Prince Fielder had two RBI yesterday. They were pretty lucky RBI, if you ask me.
Two singles, right?
Well, the first one was a bloop single. The second one was a solid line drive single, but he, in my opinion, clearly struck out looking on the pitch before from Jesse Hahn, who, you know, as it relates to that, had a very unlucky outing because of both of Fielder's RBIs were very lucky, in my opinion. So,
think, you know, obviously we're worried about Fielder's recovery from neck surgery. I think Nick Markakis's performance is worth watching in relation to Fielder, because as far as I can tell, they had at least very similar procedures. I've tried to find something online refuting that or confirming that and haven't been able to find anything, but the words used to describe the procedure, which is still relatively new to the baseball world, so I guess that's why there doesn't seem to be that much information out there, but it seems like it was the same thing. So Markakis is off to a pretty good start, but also not showing that much power yet.
I think what Scott really wanted to say there, Adam, is why didn't you put Nick Markakis in the overreaction?
Because I had to make room for our next overreaction. Heath, how big of an overreaction is this? Jake Lamb, 18% owned, is this year's breakout.
Well, I mean, you're calling somebody a breakout, again, kind of like the bold predictions. You don't necessarily have to think it's the most likely scenario, and he looks as likely as anybody, I think. He's off to a good start. The guy that has to hate this right now is Yasmani Tomas. Things are not working out well for him. Jake Lamb and David Peralta are seizing the opportunity.
Do you guys think Jake Lamb is going to sit against lefties?
Well, that's what's happened so far. They both Lamb and David Peralta, who also hit a home run yesterday. They actually hit the two longest home runs in all of baseball yesterday, Peralta 1 and Lamb 2. They both sat against Bumgarner opening day. Now, that's a especially difficult lefty, so it's unclear that it's going to be every single lefty they're going to sit, but right. I know Chip Hale, we always have to pause so I don't say Kelly, I know Chip Hale said yesterday he plans on using his bench a lot. So, you know, other than Goldschmidt, I'm not sure you can count. I'm trying to make sure there's another guy. I guess maybe Trumbo. I'm not sure you can count on any Diamondback to play every single day.
But I do feel like Lamb, on the days that he sits against lefties, there's a pretty good shot he's getting at least one at bat and maybe two, because he's going to pinch hit.
Yeah, and you could say the same for Peralta. They both pinch hit in game one.
So, by the way, Chip Kelly would have been a great fit for the old Diamondbacks regime, because both loved to trade away star players. So there's today's baseball football joke. Big news around baseball. Henry Mejia is on the DL with elbow inflammation. Jerry's Familia is in line to get saves. And it might not be too long of a DL stint for Mejia. Plus, we got the Parnell situation, too. Brandon Belt left with a groin strain. He's going to have an MRI today. He doesn't think it's too bad. Ryan Braun expects to be back maybe today, maybe tomorrow. Justin Verlander probably will not pitch this weekend. Kyle Lobstein could fill in for him. Matt Cain is on the DL. He could miss a few weeks with a flexor tendon strain in his elbow. And Chris Heston is going to start today for San Francisco, who had Vogelsong in there yesterday. Jake Peavy may not start Sunday. He might be going to the DL. The Giants rotation's in trouble at the moment.
It seems like everybody's speculating on Yusmeiro Petit, but there's not anything official that he's actually going to start, right?
No, there's not. And I think because they called up Heston, and obviously they have Vogelsong who can take, you know, those two guys can replace Kane and Peavy. I think they just really want Petit or Pettit. Is it Petit or Pettit?
Petit.
Yeah.
That is awesome. I got the name right.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. I think they just really want him in the bullpen. You know, Heston, I think, is worth monitoring here because he's not like a big time prospect. He's 26 years old. His minor league numbers weren't outstanding, but in the PCL last year, he had a 3.38 ERA and 1.17 WHIP. And I was reading John Sickles this morning, who's a prospect guru, one of my favorites. He runs minorleagueball.com. And something he wrote about Heston this preseason was if you're looking for a Matt Shoemaker out of nowhere pitching breakout, Heston is as good of a candidate as any. So, and I'm not adding him in any leagues based on that, but if he has a good first start, certainly the deeper ones I might look into it.
Well, that's a great scouting report, because you got to figure people might be looking at Heston starting today and thinking in daily fantasy leagues, which we'll talk about in about 10 minutes, maybe we start a bunch of Diamondbacks. We'll ask Keith about that in a little bit. And Scott White on a video yesterday, by the way, we have great videos on the website, fantasynews.cbsports.com. Heath does a daily video every morning, tells you about who to start in your daily leagues. And Scott now do a lot of videos breaking down the waiver wire, whatever, a bunch of topics with Jamie Erdahl. who
we
Scott,
do we do Alex, like 40 player update videos a day. Like,
yeah, they're always
Al
on
and
set.
I going yesterday. It's going to be Heath and Al today. Just like, you know, 40 seconds on players based on stuff that happened yesterday. So it ends up being a lot of info if you just sit there and watch them one after another.
And you've got, well, Al has Jamie Erdahl, one of our hosts, saying BABIP, which is annoying, because if I were there, this never would have happened. But Scott, on a video yesterday, you said, Steven Vogt is one of the most under-owned players in fantasy. We did talk about Vogt on the podcast on Tuesday, yesterday, but you weren't there, so go ahead and talk about Vogt. He's something, I forgot, it's like 20%, 25% owned.
Yeah, and opening day, he homered and hit a double among two or three hits. I can't remember exactly, but it was a great performance. And if you'll remember last year, Vogt came up and was like a must-add everywhere because he was off to such a great start. He hit like 360 over his first 44 games, roughly. And then after that, things kind of fell apart. He was in and out of the lineup with a foot injury, wasn't able to catch anymore because of the foot injury, ended up having surgery on the foot in the offseason. So it's reasonable to think that injury was impacting his performance. You look at his minor league track record, high batting averages there. This guy seems like a legit hitter. And now he's three games away from gaining catcher eligibility. I think he's good enough to be a starting catcher in any league, even if he sits against the majority of left-handers. A lot of, you know, all catchers sit to some degree. I would anticipate ranking him 11th at catcher once he is eligible there, just behind Russell Martin in my rankings. And with the potential to pass Martin, I have Martin 10th, McCann 9th. So I don't really see him breaking that McCann threshold anytime soon. But the point is top 12. So in anticipation of that, if you don't like your catcher, definitely want to pick up Vogt.
Well, and I think this is why I'm the new guy here. This is why you this is why you listen to the podcast, because the reason he's not highly owned is because he doesn't have that C next to his name yet. As soon as that C shows up, his ownership's going to go through the roof. Now, Scott's telling you about it beforehand. Go get him now.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Especially if you're in a weekly league. Well, I'm not sure if you can drop a catcher for a first baseman due to roster restraints. Depends on your league setup.
You've got somebody you can drop.
Yeah, you've got someone you can drop, most likely. Any standouts that you guys want to talk about from Tuesday before we talk about this year's JD Martinez? I do think Chris Hatcher needs to be brought up.
Yeah, definitely.
You got to save for the Dodgers. Keep saying that. You got to save for the Dodgers on Monday. He was horrible yesterday. Gave up 4 runs, 2 earned on 3 hits. Did not record an out.
Yeah, and I don't know if this came up on the podcast yesterday because I wasn't on it, but there was a the game recap for MLB.com for the Dodgers yesterday when Hatcher got the save was, it looks like he's going to be the closer with Jansen down, even though Mattingly is not saying so. So it's like Mattingly told reporters to read between the lines on whether Jock Peterson was the everyday center fielder. He wouldn't outright say it. So it seems like this is kind of Mattingly's MO. And the thing is, Hatcher was working as a closer in this game, ninth inning of a tie game at home, where you're not saving the closer for a save situation, and this is what happens. So I guess what I'm saying is Hatcher is still probably the front runner for saves, even with this meltdown, but now there's reason for doubt again. So, you know, he's behind, like, LaTroy Hawkins. He's behind J. Reese Familia for me. He's behind a few guys. But if he comes right back out and gets a save again, he is worth picking up because now Kenley Jansen is saying mid-May. So he's going to get a chance to get a decent number of saves here before Jansen returns.
Heath Cummings, what stood out to you?
Well, I wasn't on the podcast and I haven't been this whole season, so I have to pass along a message I got from Kansas City about you.
About me?
Yes. I'm sure you guys discussed on the podcast the standout performance of Yordano Ventura.
Yes.
Okay. When Yordano had his cramp, which looked like one of the most painful cramps in the history of cramps, and he is a little bit, he has a flair for dramatic. So, but when that happened, and in the time period where there was some speculation that it was a cramp, I got a text message from Kansas City that says, tell Adam to stop talking about Giordano getting hurt.
I got like six tweets that said, like, oh, you jinxed Giordano.
Yes, yes. So you need to just chill.
Hey.
Giordano.
Like, that would have been the prediction of the year, though, if you got it right.
It really would have been.
Sorry you don't like the result, but you should have listened to Adam, you know?
Yeah, I know, I know. It would have been... I got to be honest, Kansas City, I'm kind of rooting for it at this point.
Yeah, you are just playing the villain perfectly now.
Yeah. Now that I know I'm so associated with Giordano Ventura having Tommy John surgery, I'm kind of pulling for it. Heath, anything from the diamond?
Yeah, yesterday I was really I was impressed with Paxton's start. We may talk about him a little bit later, but I mean, really just got a little bit unlucky with not getting any run support. Only gave up two runs, and that came on a home run, David Fries. I think it was an encouraging start. Of course, he's done well against the Angels in the past. He had three good starts against them last year, but very happy with what I saw.
That was a good call of yours, Heath. I know on your video you said Paxton would be a good play in daily, and six innings for him, two runs on four hits, one walk, five strikeouts. Very encouraging there, because walks and strikeouts weren't exactly his strength last year. Anything else? Or shall we move on?
Let's move on. There's a lot here.
Okay. Matt Snyder is predicting 2015's J.D. Martinez. Who could have that type of year? And this was in a blog entry that he posted on the website a few days ago. I'll read the names, and we're going to go 0 to 10. 0 being no chance, 10 being excellent chance to be this year's J.D. Martinez. Yasmani Grandal, where would you guys put him on this scale, which I'm not going to name because I don't want to name it the Martinezometer?
I had Grandal on my breakouts list, so I'm thinking I need to go kind of high here. It's a breakout to the extent of Martinez last year is kind of hard to predict, so I think high would be something like, I'll say 7. It's pretty high.
Okay.
I think that's pretty high.
Yeah.
I mean, if somebody's a 10, then they're probably not really J.D. Martinez, because we have more faith in them than we would have in J.D. Martinez.
I don't know. This is a hard gauge to wrap your head around, but
I was going to say 4.
So does that mean you kind of think Grandal is who he is? Is that?
I think Grandal can be a little better than what he was last year, but I think it's a stretch to say he's going to jump to J.D. Martinez.
Okay.
Well, I mean, are we talking exactly J.D. Martinez numbers? Because are we talking about Grandal's value relative to his position?
Yeah, let's say breakout relative to his position. So Martinez was great, obviously, but he's an outfielder. So let's scale it down to...
And Martinez was a top, what, outfielder last year?
Well, it's tough if you're talking about when he became a starter or the whole season.
Right. I would guess he was a top 5 outfielder after becoming a starter. At least he had to be top 10.
You need to be a top 2 or 3 catcher.
Probably.
The top 5 catcher, you're only going to play one of them.
Yeah, this is hard to...
Yeah, okay. We're starting over. Starting over on the scale,
yeah.
I don't want to take it too literally.
Yeah.
So this year's breakout, Yasmani Grandal, Heath says 4, Scott says 7. Let's go to Jake Mariznick.
Not a big fan of Mariznick and not confident in his playing time. I'll go like a 2 here.
Yeah, I'm with Scott. 2 sounds good to me.
And by the way, I think the theme here for Matt, for most of these guys, was a once-hyped prospect who hasn't been great so far, but now he could be. Next up, Johnny Giavitella, who is the Angels' starting second baseman.
He has the opportunity now, and he had a fine spring, but it wasn't like such a good spring that he'd be starting for just about any team. You know, he didn't have much competition there, so I don't know that we're seeing signs of anything yet. I'm going to go like 2 for him also. Though it's worth noting, J.D. Martinez was terrible last spring, so.
I have a soft spot in my heart for Johnny Giavitella, but I don't know that. I mean, I might go 3. I do think that he's shown in the past that I mean, he can be a decent bat, but he doesn't have the potential to be like a breakout, I don't think.
Marcus Semien.
I think Matt Snyder has the benefit of writing for like just a general baseball audience where Marcus Semien is still a nobody to them. I think fantasy owners, he's already played up so much that it would almost be misleading of me to go anything less than like 9 here.
Right. Understood.
He's the most likely. I mean, of course, I have the advantage of having already seen the list, but he's going to be the number one guy on the list probably.
Well, this next guy is interesting. Travis Snyder, 41% owned. He's 4-for-5 with a double, 3 RBI, 3 walks, no strikeouts. He batted 5th Monday for the Orioles. Snyder batted 3rd yesterday. So
yep.
I know this is somebody Scott liked coming over to Baltimore.
And honestly, when you first brought up this topic at the top of the show, that was the first name that popped in my mind. If I was just asked to pick a name out of the blue, Travis Snyder would be the name because he fits the profile exactly. A guy in his late 20s now who seemed like he was going to be a big deal when he first came up and wasn't for years. But he kind of showed signs of a breakthrough last year and is off to a good start this year. So I would be checking all my waiver wires right now to see if he's unknown. He is widely available. It might be tough to pick him up in a 3 outfielder league just because there's enough depth at that position, but 5 outfielder leagues for sure. He needs to be owned.
Yeah, I think Snyder is, and if we're going to say Semien's a 9, then I'd put him at an 8.
I didn't give it a number, I guess. I'll go 9 for him also.
Would you guys rather have Snyder or Shin-Soo Choo?
I'm not that high on Chu. I guess I'll go Chu, but we're very close to Snyder overtaking him, I think.
I'll go Chu.
Next up, Francisco Cervelli, Pirates catcher. 0-10. I'll vote 0.
Yeah, I just don't think there's enough upside there. He could be like useful in a Carlos Ruiz sort of way, I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah, Heath? I'll go 1.
1.
Okay. I like this next one, Heath. Michael Saunders, because in the article, Matt points out getting away from Safeco could be really good for him. He had really bad home splits when he was with the Mariners. Now he's with the Blue Jays. He's on the DL right now. Saunders is a guy I'm sort of interested in as a stash in a 5 outfielder league.
Yeah, I think, again, the problem with Saunders is that's a pretty crowded situation there.
I don't think so. I think he'll be starting when he comes back. I mean, I think he's better than Kevin Pillar.
Right, but could it be a platoon since Saunders bats lefty, Pillar righty?
Yep, absolutely could.
That would, obviously if Saunders performed well enough, he could break through the platoon, but home away splits, I think he's like a 270 career hitter away from Safeco or something like that. I'm just relying on memory when I was kind of preparing to talk up Saunders as a sleeper this spring and then he got hurt. But it was more like a back of your roster type of sleeper. I don't know that he's going to be, I don't see him being like a hugely impactful player. So I'll go like 5, maybe 6.
I've got him as a career 241 hitter on the road.
On the road. Maybe I was looking at more recent history.
Last year in 37 games, he hit 288 on the road.
I don't know where I pulled 270 from, but thanks for looking it up.
He does have like a 2020 season to his name. Or like 1921 season to his name, something like that.
Yeah, he does.
And the last one, let's just get a number on this one, guys, so we can do our 30-minute daily fantasy segments. Nick Franklin.
I think people are kind of sleeping on this guy. I'll go like a 5.
It's really hard for me to believe Nick Franklin is only 24 years old.
Yeah.
Like it seems like he's been a prospect for like 10 years.
Remember how good a start he got off to when he first came up? I think it was just 2 years ago, and everybody thought he was the next big thing, and then just hasn't gotten much of a chance since then.
No, and I think I like his chances, like you said, more than probably the general public does right now, which probably makes him a good J.D. Martinez award winner. So, yeah, 4.
Cool. Time for our 30-minute daily segment, which is at the 34-minute mark today, but that's okay. Heath, I got a question for you. Now,
yes.
Look, if you're looking at the lineups, well, actually, no. So for FanDuel, for example,
uh-huh.
Your lineups lock at first pitch, right?
Yes.
I feel like catcher could be a big gamble, especially if you're taking a catcher in a later game. Because if a guy's already played two games in a row, maybe this is a topic that's not necessarily just for today, but for the future, if a catcher's played two games in a row or three games in a row, that's a position where they sit a lot. So how do you approach the catcher position in these daily fantasy formats?
I don't think at this point in the year that's really a big issue. I do agree in July or August that could be a big issue. But I do think that the teams are getting better at, and the beat reporters are getting better at getting that information out to us.
Okay.
I mean, if you're looking at a late catcher that starts at 10 o'clock Eastern, that's 3 hours. I don't think there's going to be very many situations where a catcher gets scratched unless it has something to do with an injury in the last 3 hours.
Yeah, but there's like a 2 o'clock or a 1 o'clock game today.
Right. And that's, I guess, a good topic to talk about. We are not, for the most part, going to cover those 2 o'clock and 1 o'clock games when there's one or two of them.
Okay.
Because all of the bigger contests tonight are going to be the evening only.
Okay.
And the reason for that is most people, unlike us, their job doesn't have anything to do with fantasy sports. And so they set their lineups at 5 or 6 o'clock tonight. So there just aren't near as many people that are going to play in the afternoon contest. So those contests aren't as big, so the prizes aren't as big.
Well, CBS Sports hosts one-day fantasy baseball leagues on FanDuel, and for every dollar you deposit, FanDuel will match it with up to $200 that gets earned as you play. That's a bonus of up to $200. So go to FanDuel.com and use the offer code CBS, FANDUEL.com. Sign up today. Use the offer code CBS. Heath, any advice today? What do you got for us?
Well, how do you feel about the Brewers, Adam?
I feel like they're due.
Sometimes
teams slump, all at once. So I'm like kind of afraid.
Yeah, and that's kind of the crux of the article, at least the beginning of it today. And it's actually more about Matt Latos because I thankfully avoided him last night. But there was a lot of people that played him because they thought, it's the Braves. And so the first thing you kind of have to master when you're playing daily fantasy is getting over those things. The thing I'm trying to get over is the Brewers because they've made me look silly 2 days in a row. Today they go up against Eddie Butler, who's thrown 21 innings above AA and he's given up 18 earned runs. Now only one of those starts was in AAA, but it was bad too. So I would not say the Brewers are my top stack of the day, but they're still up in the top three. I think the Diamondbacks, and I know we talked a little bit about how maybe the matchup wasn't quite as good. They still have the biggest over-under, so I'm going to have to go there. At pitcher, there's really three guys that I like, and I'll be interested to see which ones you guys like the best. Jordan Zimmerman versus the Mets?
No, not really.
He's the most expensive one. I have the list pulled up here.
I don't like the expensive pitchers, Heath. I think the matchups are tough.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't like the most expensive today. There's two I like here, so we'll see what Heath's second and third are.
Carrasco.
That's one of them. Carrasco at Houston. Yeah, that should be a big strikeout game.
Against Feldman, right?
What's that?
Against Feldman.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah, so that's a good one.
High win potential, too.
Well, and Carrasco, this is kind of irrelevant, but Carrasco completely dominated the Astros in two starts last year. Like 15 innings, and I think he had 20 strikeouts and gave up one run.
Okay.
And then the third one I've kind of gone back and forth on. You guys want to guess who the biggest favorite of the day is?
The biggest favorite?
Willie Peralta.
No.
No.
You're close. He's not far off.
The guy, Garrett Cole.
No, he's an underdog.
Really? Who's pitching for the Red Sox today? Porcello?
Yes, and he's not too far, but he is a favorite, but he's not.
Is it Scott Kazmir?
It is Scott Kazmir.
That was the other guy I like.
Yes.
Yeah.
So Scott Kazmir, I've gone back and forth. I think Scott Kazmir is my third favorite play in like a 50-50 or a double up. I think Michael Pineda has some value in a tournament or GPP.
I feel like, and I know I said this on opening day, unless you're just, it's a tournament and you're going for, the kind of a dare to be different lineup
yeah.
and a really cheap starting pitcher, if you're paying for a starting pitcher, you want a guy who can has the potential for, like, I don't know, 7-plus strikeouts or something. And Kazmir, I know his final rate wasn't that great, but during that middle stretch of the season when he was on, it was like 8 strikeouts, 10 strikeouts, 9 strikeouts over and over again. So I feel like he has that he has a sneaky strikeout potential.
I'm going to wrap it up with just a few notes here. Detroit's facing Ricky Nolasco. Could be good for Tigers hitters.
Yeah, if you play the all-day slate, I think the Tigers are the best offense.
Okay, okay. That's an early game, right?
Yeah.
I'm starting Tom Kohler in FanDuel for $6,600. He made 4 starts against the Braves last year, had a 2.77 ERA with a good amount of strikeouts. I'm doing this so I can load up on hitters. He had an ERA of 3 at home last year, Tom Kohler, and I just think the Marlins are due. I do not think the Marlins are getting swept. I think the Marlins are going to win today against the Braves. Hanley Ramirez is 10 for 29 with 5 home runs against Aaron Harang. He's an expensive outfielder at 4,300. He's not shortstop eligible in FanDuel. Guys, David Peralta and Jake Lamb are facing a righty today, and it's Heston. So I think maybe good plays if you want to save some money, Peralta and Lamb.
Yeah, I think that Peralta, Lamb, Goldschmidt stack will be probably pretty prevalent.
Adam LaRoche batted 204 against lefties last year. He's facing Danny Duffy. Maybe you want to avoid him. Pablo Sandoval, if you're looking to stack Red Sox, 5 for 26 against Aaron Harang. Just wanted to throw that one out there. That's it for me. Anything else from you guys?
You know, I don't know. I'd be a little reluctant to start Kohler, I guess is all I want to say.
Yeah, taking a gamble.
I'd be very reluctant to start Kohler.
Look, I'm taking a gamble.
Braves, the stats for the Braves last year against them are irrelevant, I think, because, you know, they're going from being the most striking outest team in the majors. I think they were. I predict in the NL they'll be the least in strikeouts this year. It's just a completely different, lineup.
Okay. Works for me. So let's grade some trade. Oh, no. We got some more stuff to do here. Sorry. Then we'll grade some trades. 4 up, 2 down. If you're new to the show, we usually do 3 up, 3 down, but I will fudge the numbers sometimes. 4 up, Adrian Gonzalez has 2 home runs already. Derek Norris, 4 for 9 with 2 doubles, 3 runs scored. He's been batting second for the Padres. Will Myers has 2 steals as the Padres' leadoff hitter. Myers stole 11 bases in 175 games in 2 seasons prior to this year and was not a base stealer in the minors. And Kevin Kiermaier is 3 for 7. He homered yesterday. So Adrian Gonzalez, Derek Norris, Will Myers, Kevin Kiermaier. Anybody really stand out to you guys?
Let's see here. Yeah, there's a couple notable things here. And I actually think Adrian Gonzalez is the least notable. Norris batting second could be a big deal if it continues. He could enter the top 12 catcher discussion himself. And then I would say, you know, Meyer stealing bases is significant. If that continues, that adds a lot to his value. Kevin Kiermaier, I think, has been overlooked as a potential 5 outfielder league guy, in part because I think nobody really bought into what he did last year. But it's just another indication that this guy has more power than we're giving him credit for. I mean, he had, I think, the 3rd longest home run of the day yesterday, just completely destroyed it to center off Gausman. So I think he's worth keeping an eye on.
2 down. Heath, I'll give you 2 down. Sorry.
Okay.
Michael Morse went 0 for 4 with 3 strikeouts. He's 1 for 8 with 5 strikeouts this season. Morse got off to a great start last year. Brett Lurie, 0 for 4 with 4 strikeouts against the Rangers. He's 1 for 8. Let's say a roto league, Heath, with 5 outfielders, corner infield, middle infield. Leagues where Morris and Lurie are more relevant. How patient are you going to be with these guys?
I think you have to be pretty patient because this is what these guys... I mean, I don't think either one of these things should surprise you if you're a Michael Morris or Brett Lurie owner. These things are going to happen with these guys, and then they're going to have games where they make you look really smart.
Would you drop Lurie for Lamb?
Oh. I think there's more upside there with Lamb, so probably yes.
Would you drop Morris for Kevin Kiermaier?
Yeah, I'm not quite as excited about Kevin Kiermaier as Scott is, so probably not.
Scott, I wouldn't do that either. That's more. Okay. Kiermaier's more of a scouting team option.
Would you guys rather have Michael Morse or David Peralta?
Morse. You know, I'd like Peralta if he was playing every day, but it's not so clear he will be.
Okay. And fringy starting pitchers. Tell me how you would rank these guys in case people are looking to pick up a starter. These guys pitched yesterday. Jesse Hahn, Matt Garza, Jordan Lyles, Colby Lewis. Jesse Hahn, Matt Garza, Jordan Lyles, Colby Lewis. How would you rank them?
I would rank them just as you listed them. Hahn, Garza, Lyles, and Lewis. Hahn is the only one that's you know, on the fringes of being owned in mixed leagues, I think.
I think I would go very similar. Hahn, Garza, I might put Lewis ahead of Lyles.
And in the bullpen, Chris Hatcher, we talked about Steve Cishek got lit up. His ERA is 108. I think he only did that to boost Matt Latos' confidence. Just a thought. And as Scott has mentioned, Kevin Gausman did pitch out of the bullpen yesterday. He gave up a home run. He actually allowed two steals as well in two and a third, but he struck out four in two and a third. Let's see. Grade the trade. Might as well grade the trade now, and then we'll do some emails. Ryan Dean. Giving up Rajay Davis and K-Rod for Jason Hayward in a 6x6 14-team roto league. Giving up Rajay Davis and K-Rod for Jason Hayward, 6x6 roto. Oh, Heath. Here's how we grade trades.
Okay.
A C is average. A C means both teams did fine.
Okay.
Anything C plus or better means you win. C minus, you lost.
That makes sense.
Okay.
So an F is really, really bad.
Yeah, but I think what people have to wrap their minds around is that a C is fine. Or
yeah.
A C plus is a
win. You know, there's great inflation going on in the American school system, and you know, people are disappointed with Bs when Bs supposed to be a good grade.
I think they're doing away with A's and B's and C's and D's now because it hurts people's feelings. You get a 4, a 3, a 2, or a 1.
You're kidding.
Yeah.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
That's, oh my gosh.
It's called standards-based grading.
What losers? Like, toughen up, kids of America. Are you kidding me?
I don't know if they would say it's because it hurts people's feelings, but that's my opinion.
Well, whatever it is, that's
unnecessary. We probably shouldn't get into a standards-based grading discussion on the podcast.
No, we should. This is what the podcast is for.
Okay.
What's the grade for this first one?
On which scale?
A through F.
Oh, okay. This is an... I kind of want to go A+, but I don't want to, like, there may be something better coming. So I will say A+, though, because I don't see any scenario where I would turn down the opportunity to get Hayward for what, in my mind, is like...
Ugh. Nothing?
I mean, they deserve to be owned in a 4-team league, both Davis and K-Rod, but on the very, very low end of the spectrum.
Yeah. And you're not really high on Hayward.
No, I'm not, but I mean, that's relative to...
Yeah.
Other outfielders like him.
I disagree with you about K-Rod, though. I think he's a must-own in a 14-team roto league.
Okay, I thought I pretty much said that.
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought you said on the bottom end or something.
They're on the bottom end of the must-own players in a 14-team league.
It's kind of weird because, like, no closers are really on the bottom end. Like, not trying to nitpick, but you know what I mean. Like, there's value in saves.
He's one of the bottom-tier closers, though.
Yeah.
So...
All right, A from you or whatever. Heath,
A.
What you got? A, okay.
Four.
Dear, this is from, no name, sorry. Dear Mel Alkior, Huat Skite, Quoth Hemmings, and I am Adzer. Interesting take on our names. 6x6 Daily Categories League, grade the trade. I give up Tulo and Ryan Zimmerman. I get Paul Goldschmidt and Neil Walker. Give up Tulo and Zimmerman for Goldschmidt and Walker in a Categories League.
I'll give it a C+ just because I know, you know, 2 days ago I would have been much happier than Goldschmidt than Tulo in the first round, but they are both first rounders and the second player on the Tulo side is better, so C+.
So he's giving up Tulo and Zimmerman.
Yeah, for Goldschmidt and Walker. Ryan Zimmerman.
I have trouble keeping that straight too, for what it's
worth.
I'm notoriously bad at that. I'm sure I'll mess it up at some point this segment.
B minus.
All right. From Eddie in Chicago, grade the trade. Give Jose Bautista and Chris Davis. Get Mike Trout and Nolan Arenado.
And come there's on. Your A plus.
There's your A plus. The there's your up. Four plus.
Next, proficient.
From Zachary, 12-team mixed head-to-head points league. Give up D. Gordon and Zach Greinke. Get Anibal Sanchez, David Robertson, and Jason Wirth. I already have Dozier. So he gives up D. Gordon and Zach Greinke. He gets Anibal, David Robertson, and Jason Wirth.
It's a points league. I still think it's less about Gordon than Greinke. And, you know, 12-team head-to-head points league, that's a fairly shallow league. So, you know, the value of the high-end players is magnified. I don't know in this format that I'd be willing to trade Greinke himself, just Greinke for Sanchez, Robertson, and Wirth, but before you even throw in Gordon.
Well, and that's what, I mean, if you look at this, who's the best player in the deal?
Greinke.
Who's the second best player in the deal?
Gordon.
Probably Gordon, yeah.
That's
yeah,
not
this
good.
Is a bad yeah. trade.
So I guess we got to give it a grade, right?
Yep. I'm giving it a D.
D minus.
1.5. No, D minus, yeah.
Bryce Lysimerk traded Pedroia and Swihart for Braun in a 12-team category Dynasty League. Pedroia and Swihart for Braun.
A Dynasty Leagues get tricky, because if Braun's like a super expensive keeper and Swihart's super cheap, I mean, I could see the Swihart deal being better, but just taking the names at face value, I don't like it. I'll go D plus.
He got Braun.
Okay, sorry.
There it is.
It happened.
There it is.
I will then go B plus.
Okay.
Scott, the Brewers offense is awful and Ryan Braun's going to be hurt all year. Aren't we overreacting
Bold
today?
Predictions.
We're overreacting today. I'll go B.
Okay. Last one. Chris Daly traded Chris Sale and Marcus Semien in a head-to-head categories league. He gave up Sale and Semien for DeGrom, Iwakuma, and Chris Carter. DeGrom, Iwakuma, and Chris Carter giving up Sale and Semien.
Yeah, I think I like it, even though Sale's the best player. I'll give it a B minus.
Generally speaking, I mentioned it with the Greinke trade. I feel like if you're giving up the best player, it's really, really hard to win the trade.
It is. But you're getting a lot back here.
You
particularly
are get,
for a categories.
You
league.
Are getting a lot back. I'd like to know who you're dropping, because if you're taking three players on and you're giving two up, you're getting rid of somebody else too.
He's dropping Yordano Ventura.
Then that's an F.
All right, give it a grade.
C plus.
All right, we're going to read some emails to finish out the show. Stephen P. Hancock and tweets. Would you drop Holland or Pomeranz for Clay Buchholz?
Holland or Pomeranz, I would drop neither just yet. But I'd like to pick up Buchholz. I just think they're a little too high end to drop.
I would not drop either of them.
Yeah.
Matt from Staten Island. How you doing there, Henry, Jimmy, and Tommy?
I'm guessing how you doing there is a clue, but
yeah,
nope, not for me.
Heath,
I was told not to look these up anymore, so I don't have a shot.
He actually gave us the answer in his email. It's from Goodfellas. So he likes. So he says, you guys seem to really like Zach McAllister. I believe it was Heathcliff who even went as far to say that he is a must own. Actually, I think it was Scott.
Yeah, it was not me.
Would you drop any of these guys for McAllister in a head-to-head points league, 14 teams? Jimmy Nelson, Archie Bradley, or James Paxton?
I would drop Nelson or Bradley for him. Nelson would be my first choice.
I would drop Nelson for sure. I would definitely not drop Paxton. And I would probably drop Bradley.
This is from Ken. I need a fantasy forecast for Matt Garza. Is he worth keeping in a 12-team mixed league, or would you bid on youth like McAllister? And if so, how much would you use of your budget, $100 budget, on McAllister?
Well, it's one of those things, like, I mean, if we've gotten to this point and nobody in your league's picked up McAllister yet, you shouldn't have to use a lot of your budget on him, right?
Unless it's weekly. But yeah.
Unless it's weekly. And I applied that same logic in one of our leagues because, you know, it was daily. and nobody picked up McAllister yet. So I threw like a $4 bid on him. He went for $7, and I was like, ah, I wish I'd bid $8.
Yeah.
So it's you can really second guess yourself with that. I you know, maybe if you really wanted him, go 2 or 3. If it's weekly, maybe 7 or 8. Yeah, I definitely think he's more deserving of a roster spot right now than Garza.
Finally, Michael James asks, Hector Rondon or Brett Cecil in a 10-team head-to-head categories league? Heath, Rondon or Cecil?
I will take Rondon.
Cool.
Me too.
And I will end the show. I want to thank Heath Cummings and Scott White. And Scott's face is awfully close to the computer camera. That was weird. What were you doing there?
Just seeing if you'd notice.
Oh, just freaking me out. Okay, well, yeah. It worked. Good job. We'll have Al on tomorrow, and I think Chris Towers on tomorrow, and then it'll be Scott and Al on Friday. So we've got a 4-man rotation this year for the Fantasy Baseball Today podcast. Scott,
as
thank you.
Should have.
Thanks, Adam.
What's that, Heath?
I said as all teams should have.
A 4-man rotation. And I'm Adam Azer. Thanks a lot for listening. Talk to you tomorrow.